Welcome to the Level Up Artist Podcast. We're your hosts, Adriana and May, and
Jackie Sanders. We're two art professionals sharing forward the advice and business lessons we have learned along our creative journeys.
We talk to artists, leaders, and art professionals to demystify the creative process and discover new ways to succeed as a career-minded artist.
If you find value in these conversations, please go ahead and subscribe. This will help other creatives like you find our podcast, and you'll be notified when we drop a new episode every Tuesday.
So on today's episode, we do have a guest interview. We are so excited to have Angela Lubinicki. Welcome, Angela.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, we're so excited to have you on the podcast today to discuss mainly your artistic journey, your multicultural influences, and building momentum in your creative career, as well as recording a bonus segment on social media tips for artists as part of our Level Up podcast supporter group.
Yep. Okay. But before we dive in, Angela, we're going to do a little bit of a background for our listeners who may not be yet familiar with your work. So Angela is a visual artist based in Charlotte, North Carolina. She was raised in a multicultural expatriate community in East Africa and was exposed to a variety of influences. Her artistic inspiration ranges from the bright colors and patterns she saw printed on Kenyan maridadi fabrics to the colorful tinga tinga paintings from Tanzania to bold East African batiks in Uganda. Equally inspiring were summers spent at the beach and afternoons splashing in the water under the equatorial sun. The repetitive shapes and patterns found in nature, especially water, are a constant resource for her artwork. Above all, her art is about color. Angela's palette is bright and vivid, and the colors represent life and the beauty and joy found in it. It is a reflection of her family's optimism, sense of adventure, and embracing of everything that life has to offer. Angela is currently on the board of directors of the Guild of Charlotte Artists and is in charge of their social media.
And of course, this is a very formal introduction for our listeners. But Angela, how would you describe the work that you make to someone who hasn't seen it before?
Wow. How do I describe it? Well, as Adriana has already said, it's very colorful, and I try to show joyful scenes. I like to make people smile and even just escape from their day to day by seeing people on the beach or poolside having a good time, jumping into the water. And such. That's been my theme for, I would say, the last couple of years. Yeah. How I would describe it in a nutshell.
Yeah. And I love it too, because I'm like, some of them, it almost looks like abstracted in the background with different shades of blue and white and maybe even a little bit of turquoise and teal. But then you'll have like a smiling puppy that looks like it's swimming, or you'll have it looks like some girl's about to jump into the water. Like, it's just fun. Like, it just reminds you of like good times at the beach. So it's very colorful. It's very happy. Now, I do want to ask you, Angela, how did the East African multicultural environment you grew up in shape your early artistic influences? You know, take us a little bit back. How did that influence your work?
So part of what you read was in your introduction is how I describe my influences. And I was raised in East Africa, mostly Kenya, and something was always blooming. Would it be the jacaranda trees or frangipani trees? Something was always in bloom. Something was always bright, colorful. And the artists in East Africa also do very, very bright batiks and other paintings. And so that influenced me most definitely, you know, and seeing that in my home, my parents bought all this art and our house was very colorful.
I love that. We're definitely not strangers to color ourselves.
I can see that. I can see in the background a lot of color, juicy color that's making me want to come and visit.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, next time you're in town, for sure.
Oh, I will.
Perfect. But yeah, obviously the bright, vivid colors has such an amazing energy to it. And I love how you tied that with kind of those energy that you had growing up and the environments that you were in. And I am curious though, because your artwork does incorporate both abstract and representational elements to it. Have you always worked that way, or at what point did you start blending those two styles together? Because typically people are leaning towards one or the other, but yours is a beautiful transition using both of them.
Yes, I think my first love was abstract work. And most of my early works were mostly abstract. And then I don't know, I think representational art is it, for me was always the more challenging between the two, like colors and just that was easy for me. But like showing someone their face or their bodies in a semi-believable way. That was for me a challenge. And then when I started doing these pours a few years back, I saw them as perfect backgrounds, like water. Mostly I saw water in them. And you know how you look up in the sky and you look at clouds and you see shapes in them? Well, the pours in themselves are beautiful, but to me they lacked something. And I started seeing shapes in them, and I started seeing bodies in them, and people having fun on, like splashing in the water and jumping in the water. And that's how that developed, basically.
I love that. So you
Nice.
start with the pouring element and then kind of bringing to the surface what your eye makes of those pores.
Yes.
Do you typically rely on the pour to lead the direction of the work, or do you ever kind of go in knowing generally what you want the subject matter to be?
Both. Sometimes I will just do a whole bunch of pours because I just want to have this color and I just want to try out different things. And you don't always know what's going to come out of them. Have you tried a pour? So they're
Sometimes, and
not great.
even just the logistics too of, okay, well, if you're going to be mixing the material and prepping your space, that's what many, myself included, and many other artists we talk to, like, it makes sense if you have paint on your palette knife to like have three panels out while you're working. So it sounds similar to pouring of, if you're mixing all your colors, it's almost easier to make multiple at a time than
Right.
focusing on one to completion and then a second to completion.
Right. So there's not always a plan as in, oh, I'm going to put two people in here, or three people in here, and it's going to be, a bunch of kids jumping in the water. No, I don't know that until it's dry and it's set. And sometimes there's surprises, because pouring is there is an element of surprise, like oh, I didn't expect that result, but that's great. And then I can have them sometimes spread on around my studio, and I look at them each day, and I may not see what's going to be on it, what I'm going to paint on it for a while, And I look at a lot of photographs online, and I do a lot of research for what I want, and then I usually find something that works, that'll work perfectly for a pour, or in my mind perfectly anyway.
I love that. You
Yeah,
kind
like
of let
different
the
post
panels,
references.
and you kind of let each of the pieces become what it needs to be, I
Yes,
imagine.
bit like cloud watching.
No, I love that because I'm like, that's very similar to, any of our listeners, if you're more familiar with like the intuitive painting methods. A lot of times that is exactly what you're doing. You create a non-objective or non-representational abstract first as your background, and then you react to it. And then essentially that's how you get or figure out what the painting's going to be. So I love that you're using the pores in a similar way. You're using some of the things that are outside of your control to help you figure out what comes next. So I love that. Now question for you, how do you balance maintaining consistency in your art while allowing for creative growth, right? So this is something that sometimes artists get into where they're like, "Ooh, this is actually really good. I really like it." I have to make more. But then at the same time, do I still want to make more? Do I want to go somewhere else? And it's like on yours, it's like it's pretty consistent and it keeps evolving as it goes. But how do you balance, the consistency of both?
Maybe because I'm not thinking too much about it, you know?
Excellent.
Well, for a long time, I didn't know that you needed to be a little bit more consistent. Like, to me, the term, well, where's your, you know, somebody said to me, well, what's your body of art? Where's your body of art? And I'm like, body of art? What the heck is that? Like, I thought a good artist could show a whole bunch of a variety of things, you know, that they could do. But no, people, I mean, you should have a voice, and I agree, you know, you should have a voice, and your style or the way you do things should be recognizable in it. But don't let it stop you from pushing yourself to try something a little harder, you know?
Yeah, that's always that delicate balance of trying to experiment and play and pursue those new paths while also having some kind of recognizability to an extent or consistency from one to the other, to where you can feel like you can kind of build on your message or on your style from piece to piece.
Yes. I think if you keep things in broad general terms, like for instance, my message was, especially during COVID, was people need to see some happy art. You know, I need to bring out some joy here. And so I was painting a lot of smiling people in water and having fun. And so if you think about it, oh, I'm talking, my interest is joy. It doesn't just have to be people in at the pool are having a good time. It can be people at a barbecue. It could be you're driving in a Jeep on safari, or, you know, or on some great adventure of some sort.
Yeah, I love
Yeah.
that. And I think the one thing, kind of to Adriana's question of wanting that consistency to some level with a unified theme, such as bringing joy during a time when you feel like it needs to be spread in the world, is it comes up a lot when artists start thinking of their work from an exhibiting or selling standpoint. When you think about, like, obviously putting it on a website or pitching yourself to a gallery, rather than making it in your home where no one else really sees it. But having a consistent brand, so to speak, isn't as important when you're making it just for yourself. But I'm curious, when did you first start exhibiting your work and selling art?
So I think the first I was trying to remember my first ex serious exhibit, or semi-serious, I should say, was in Kenya in 2001. We moved back as a family to Kenya, and there was an exhibit, and I entered it, and I loved it. And I had a good time. I met new artists. And then we moved back to the States, and I started entering more exhibits that were in my area. And then I sold a piece. And then a neighbor heard I was an artist and wanted and commissioned me. And, you know, so it developed that way. Yeah.
Nice. I love that. That was a few years ago when the neighbor wanted the commission, and then it just all started from there.
Pretty much, yeah. That was 20 years ago, something like
Nice.
that. Yeah.
Nice. No, I love it. I love it. Now, obviously, like you said, you started with that exhibition. You are very active with exhibitions. I mean, anybody takes a quick look at Angela's Instagram, you'll see. You're always actively showing your work, and not just in the same kind of shows either. You actually have a variety of exhibitions and events and different partnerships that you do, and nonprofits here, and this kind of other auction, or like there's always like different things going on, which is fantastic. We love to see that, right? Because otherwise, I mean, I'm so glad you're good about sharing about it, is what I mean to say with that. Because sometimes it's like, as artists, we may just do our work, or we may do those activities, but don't necessarily like open it, like talk about it. Not because we don't want to, we just forget. That's me. I'm talking about me. But I just forget. But I do want to ask you, how do you find and then choose the type of opportunities that you're like, ooh, that one can help me grow my career, whether it's like, or maybe it's just for fun, but like, how do you pick those, find and choose those opportunities that help you out?
I don't think I'm as career-minded as you think I am. I do look for fun, and I go, like the Charlotte International Festival of Arts. They're putting out an art call for 100 tiny things. And I'm like, 100 tiny things. Well, I could do that. That's fun, and people are going to get to see it in a park setting, and it's creative, and I just love it, So I go for it. And out of that, I don't know. I mean, I didn't sell that piece. It was just part of this festival. But out of that, I met all these other artists. We got to go to their party. They had a party for all the artists, which was so much fun. It was in Uptown Charlotte, and they had free drinks and pretzels and food and everything. It was just lovely, And so that's how I decide what I want to do is when I if I see that it's going to be fun and people involved and in my community,
Yeah.
And that's what interests me. That's why I also applied last year to Charlotte Shout, and I did their Easter egg parade, these giant eggs that they set up in Uptown in the park, big old eggs, 13 of them, and every year another artist can gets to do them. So I did it
Nice.
last year. It was so much fun,
Okay. Well, I'm hearing a pattern here, which is a perfectly acceptable pattern. It's if it sounds like it'll be fun. And that's actually great because that definitely ties in perfectly with the type of art that you do. And I'm sure if the opportunity opens up and it's like a dry, like serious, just you're probably like, nah. Like there needs to be something else. Plus, I've seen you in action. I have the honor of having seen you in action. And it's like you're also networking is the other thing that, is coming out of this. It's also those opportunities to be able to connect with other artists, about their practices and, like you said, fun.
I definitely am curious what other people are other artists are doing, especially in my community, And I feel like a community can only be successful if everybody does their part, And it does, and that means not being selfish, and that means supporting your community, going to other artists' exhibits, and it, or if you see a call for art that doesn't. That you know that that person is perfect for you send it on, you pass it on.
Yes, we are definitely huge proponents of that as well. It's one of
We
those
do that
like
all the
rising,
time.
rising tides lifts all ships, and there's enough art opportunities to go around. That's definitely one of our mottos here on the podcast and just in our arts community is just community over competition. Always here. Like, if this isn't the right fit for me, let me send it to all the artists I know where it could be a right fit. Even if it's one I'm applying to, hey, you should also be applying because I know we're both going in the same direction. And if it's not going to be me that gets it, I'd rather it be you that gets it.
And so as the social media person for the Instagram for the guild, anytime I see an art call, I repost it, everything. Whenever I see something that I think somebody can benefit from in our area or even outside of our area, I put it up back up on stories so people can see it, So.
I love that. Now, when it comes to kind of the opposite, I guess, of like rather than what opportunities that you pursue and that you take and that you share with other artists. Have you ever said no to a potentially lucrative opportunity? And what made you say no to that opportunity?
So, how do you know whether it's lucrative? Do you know? I mean, I've had a few emails of so-called galleries or art promoters And they're like, oh, we're going to have an exhibit in New York. And we saw your art and we love it. Go ahead and sign up with us. And then you follow their links. And it turns out that it's going to cost you not only shipping all your art to New York or wherever, but also, you know, whatever, $2,000 to be part of it.
Right.
And without any guarantees that you will sell anything.
Yep.
And, or, you know, and then your art is far away and not even sure that you're going to receive it back. So they make it sound it's very lucrative and that you're going to benefit from it all. But how do you know? How do you really, really know unless you're going to try it out? And I've not really felt it, you know? I'm like, there's enough here in my area and I don't need to be in New York or wherever these people are and pay $2,000 or what have you.
Yeah, definitely getting messages like those. Of course, at first, they're super flattering. I've definitely seen some of those myself and heard of other artists, but you're right. They definitely like entice the artists with kind of those buzzwords that they know the artist wants to see, like compliments to their work, or we think this would be like really stand out to our audience. And they're really only leveraging exposure, right? But you can't necessarily, you don't know that you're going to make a sale off of exposure, especially when there's a lot of those upfront costs to your point of shipping the work, or sometimes there are emails where it says, oh, well, if you want to buy an ad, you can get a the quarter of the page in this 500 page magazine and it's only $1,800, which I'm like, I know you think you're offering this like an opportunity, but no.
No, I don't think you really need to go like that route, you know?
Yeah.
To, you can create your own marketing campaign on Instagram and yeah. Locally. I feel locally you, and the more you network, the more you don't need those people to do it for you.
Mm-hmm. That is mm-hmm. so true. I think especially in a local community, to your point, it sounds like really leaning on that local network, the local opportunities, events that you can go to in person. Those are the kinds of really opportunities that even if it's technically just for exposure or an opportunity where you're not guaranteed to, let's say, sell your artwork in a group show, but you get to go to the events, you get to meet people in person, you get to make friends with other artists, local collectors. That's where the true value comes in versus like, mm-hmm. yeah, yes. Send it to New York. Maybe I'll see this artwork back in 6 months or maybe
I'll never see it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you said that, and I've seen those kind of emails as well, and it's interesting because then sometimes you go to Google Maps and you see where they're located, and it's like the fifth floor through like this small door, and it's like, who's gonna find it? So they're just charging you basically to fill the space, you know? Yes. And it's like, should you be paying me to fill your space anyway? So yes. I understand. Or the magazine example, oh, do this magazine in this other country, and then I'm like, do I really want to ship to that other country and deal with
right.
like foreign taxes? No, I don't. I like that. So it's like invest in your basically your local community, but if it seems like a little too far-fetched, then maybe it's I mean, of course, if you have the money to throw out, like go for it, right? Like, you know, if you have it. But most artists have a budget of sorts. So I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. It seems too good to be true. It probably is. Now, Angela, question. So obviously there's all these events that we're talking about, all these different opportunities, exhibitions. You also have to stay in contact with collectors or potential collectors. How do you stay organized?
Well, who says I'm organized?
Okay, how do you attempt to stay organized?
I do use a calendar. And the reminder thing, you know, you can remind yourself, okay, deadline's coming up for this and that, you know. I don't know that I know that there are artists out there that send emails to their collectors or whoever signs up for for their email. But I guess I'm behind the eight ball on that one.
But you mainly communicate then through, we were mentioning before we started recording, you actually do LinkedIn.
I do
so maybe
LinkedIn.
That is your newsletter equivalent. And you do, I know you do Instagram, obviously. Do you do any other social media?
I don't. I don't.
Mostly those two?
Yeah, I don't care for Facebook. Obviously, there is a connect. I mean, there is a link between Instagram and Facebook. So
yeah.
It populates my Facebook, but I don't, I never go there. I just don't like
mostly
Facebook.
Instagram and LinkedIn.
Yeah. And I mean, people can also find me on my website, and there is a, you know, contact me page there. And I do get sometimes contacted through that. So,
but mostly social media then.
Social media, yeah.
Nice.
I don't put out a newsletter. I receive newsletter from other artists, and quite frankly, I'm just, it's just too much, you know?
<It's>
Sorry.
<okay. laughs> We will convince you of that later. Don't worry.
Okay.
We will talk more about it later. No. I'm kidding. But kind of. No. But I feel like the way, looking at your LinkedIn, the way you use your LinkedIn, I think it's very similar to the way that we talk about newsletters. I think you're using it similarly. So.
Yeah,
there's
and
equivalence to everything.
It's one of those things too about I think the refreshing part about being artists or small business owners is that everyone, you get a choice on how you want to contact your audience and your potential audience, right? Kind of to your point earlier, in that you can take your own messaging into your own hands. You get to decide what you want to say about your work, where you want to say it, how you want to connect with people. I feel like that's a huge privilege this day and age. Sometimes having a website or having social media can be really intimidating, but I love how you embrace it as an opportunity, because it truly is that the artists have the power. But it does make me think about, of course, where you are now as an artist. Is there anything that you wish you could do in your art career that you haven't yet? Like, what's on the horizon as one of those like big, scary goals that you have set?
Scary? Oh, wow. There's a
Maybe
lot
not
that's
scary. But...
There's a lot that's scary, but I've tried to overcome that a little bit, you know? I would really like to do a residency, or not just one, you know, several. Go to a different place that I've never been to and explore their studio space, and or maybe even their teaching staff, you know, and learn a new craft, perhaps, you know. So I would love that. I would really love that.
Oh, that's amazing. Getting into a new creative scene, meeting new creative people. And again, kind of, I feel like that's perfectly on track or on brand from what I've learned about you over this conversation, is like putting human connection at the front of all of your creative experiences.
Yes.
Great. I love it. Well, real quick, we love to ask our guests how they define success. But first, we're going to take a quick word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by our Level Up Artist courses.
We understand that life as a modern artist can be both exciting and overwhelming. Plus, there's a lot of information out there. So what do visual artists actually need?
We've spent countless hours of trial and error, weeding through tons of information to find the gold, so you don't have to waste your time going down those endless rabbit holes.
In addition to weekly calls, we have created video course modules to cover everything from artist documents to exhibition prep, social media to technology, sales strategies, artist mindset, PDF resources, templates, and so much more.
Ready to get started? Head on over to levelupartists.com to learn more, get immediate access, and level up your career today.
Welcome back, everybody. So a question we love to ask every guest that we have on the podcast is, how do you define success as an artist?
I think that's a really good question, because it does mean different things, success, to different people. Like, I don't know, maybe to you, success means selling a painting for $1 million.
That would be nice, but no.
I would also count that as successful. But But I guess I'm just happy if I am consistently making art, consistently exhibiting, and notice my word consistent, and consistently selling some of my works as well, you know? So success to me also means somebody sees my work, it speaks to them, and they buy it, they want it. That is success, not, you know, making millions of dollars. Obviously, that's also success, and that would be very welcome, but that is not the success that I'm after. My preliminary desire for success is those things.
Love that. Yeah, I think it's would be pretty hard to argue that selling one painting for $1 million is not success. So we definitely agree with you there, but there's also other layers, which is wonderful. Now, what is one piece of advice you wish you had heard before you got started on your creative journey?
I guess I would have to say not to be so afraid or timid. And to put my art out there, you know, and to not take rejection personally. Because, I mean, you will apply to hundreds of exhibits and shows, and you will not get into each one of them. No, because your art is just not going to be good for each show for whatever reason. And don't take it personally, you know? Don't be afraid to try to get into something. Don't think, oh, I'm not going to get in. No, try. At least try. And then accept if they don't accept you. I definitely wish somebody had said that. Yeah.
It's definitely a numbers game. Yeah.
It is a little bit of a numbers game, and you shouldn't be afraid. You know, and you shouldn't feel like you don't belong.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. It's like that comparison that sometimes people make of like art is like food. You're not gonna like everything, and that's okay. Yes. You know, just because something you made is not to somebody else's taste doesn't mean it doesn't taste good. It just means they didn't like it, and that's okay. Move on.
Like, yes,
it doesn't make it bad.
No, it doesn't make it bad. No, and it doesn't mean that you don't belong at the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I love that. You don't have a seat at the table.
Yeah. You just might need to sit at another table that wants you more.
Yeah, or try all the tables you can.
Yeah. I love it. I love apply to all the tables.
Yes.
I love it. No, Angela, if somebody randomly hands you $100, what would you splurge on or invest in? It has to be something that brings you joy and relates to your art or business.
Only $100? Can it only be like $1,000?
No, that's for New York only.
Well, $100 doesn't take you very far, but I would have to say I would have to go and get more art materials, you know, more paint and more canvas. Although I was looking at this one piece of canvas and 36 by 36, and it was like $75, you know? Yeah, it's expensive. Mm-hmm. Canvas is expensive. So yeah. I'd have to buy that piece of canvas.
Maybe you can get it on sale, 2 for $100. That would be great.
That's the ticket.
There it is.
Love it. We love it. Well, Angela, this has been so much fun. What exciting projects do you have coming up that our listeners should know about after they listen to today's episode?
I have several, but two that are on the horizon. There's a gallery near me in Monroe, North Carolina, that's opening a new gallery called Presson Gallery. And they're opening their doors March 15th. And my work is going to be there among 30 other artists. So that's one thing that's coming. And then I'm also, I got into Art Fields, which for you, I don't know how many people know about Art Fields, but it's huge. It's in Lake City. Yeah. So I got
South
into
Carolina.
that. Yes, in South Carolina. And I got into that. So I'm excited for those two things right now.
Yeah. Hey, that's Lakefield. I mean, Artfields is always fun. That's such a good one. And Monroe, you're giving me memories. That's I used to live near Monroe, Indian Trail,
Did
many,
you?
many, many years ago. Yes. So I'm very familiar with Monroe.
Monroe's
So
up and coming. You won't believe how much is growing. It's growing,
yeah.
and they're redoing the whole downtown area.
Next time I'm in town, I'm gonna have to go visit.
Yes.
That's so exciting. Now, real quick before we wrap up, for our listeners, how can they stay in touch with you to hear more about exciting opportunities coming up and stay connected with you after they listen?
I do have a website and an Instagram, and my website is www.loolangi.com, and my Instagram is at loolangi bottom thing art.
Love
Perfect.
it.
Awesome.
Okay. We'll make sure to link all those things in the show notes. And then, of course, would you mind staying with us a few extra minutes so we can discuss a few social media tips for artists on a bonus segment for our podcast supporters?
Sure.
Oh, perfect. Well, in the meantime, if you want to stay connected with us in between episodes, share your feedback, or have a question you would like for us to answer on the podcast, you can reach us through social media. I'm at AmeArt across all platforms.
And I'm at JSanders Studio across all platforms. And if you want to follow the podcast, we're at Level Up Artist on Instagram. You can also visit levelupartist.com to hear the rest of this conversation and become a podcast supporter.
Yeah, and supporters get access to amazing off-the-record conversations with our guests, a community platform, and it helps to keep the podcast going.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.